Welcome to Seek Reality with your host, Roberta Grimes. Author and attorney Roberta Grimes will explore and illustrate how she, after an extraordinary experience of light in childhood, has discovered channels of communication to the afterlife and how these implications have an effect on our everyday lives. Please welcome the host of Seek Reality, Roberta Grimes.
Welcome to Seek Reality. I'm Roberta Grimes, and we're coming to you live on the BBM Global Network and TuneIn Radio. Some people are surprised that I also write fiction, as if fiction and nonfiction were two different beasts. But really, they're not. My work is about trying to understand reality, and I use my fiction to explore possibilities and to illustrate insights in a way that's fun for you and fun for me. There are other researchers and experts who do that too. And one of these folks who's now writing in both genres, I'm surprised to be able to say, is my dear friend Jamie Turndorf. Jamie has been our guest before on Seek Reality, talking about her amazing relationship with her husband, Jean Pain. Even though Jean left his material body more than a decade ago, and their marriage continues almost as it ever has. We're going to be saying more today about their almost unbelievable relationship, and we'll be talking about Jamie's wonderful work in teaching and counseling people who are struggling with issues that they may still have with deceased loved ones. The healing and relief that she can bring them is something I would not have believed if I hadn't seen it firsthand. But our primary focus today will be on the calling. Before Jean graduated from this life to the next, he and Jamie together wrote a really compelling novel that centered around a Vatican scandal that Jean discovered when he was still a Jesuit priest. And it's a scandal that speaks to what I think today is Catholicism's core and entirely ridiculous and unnecessary problem. But what personally I love most about The Calling is that it's a really touching and very intimate account of how it actually feels to be a young priest. And of course, that's from the mouth of someone who once was. Welcome, Jamie. I'm so glad you're here.
Oh, Roberta, I always admire so much how you do introductions for your guests. You are so articulate.
Sometimes I feel I'm stubborn.
Wow. That's amazing. I think maybe you should consider writing.
The thing is, Jamie also does, and we'll be talking in the last segment about all the stuff Jamie does, so you can become her friend as you are mine. So you do your own radio, so it's high praise from you that you think what I'm doing is articulate.
Yeah,
it's just not every day does it feel that way. So Jamie, tell people. Yeah. Very briefly about your history, you know, how do you know the stuff you know? What are you doing that as an expert that people need to know about? Most people, I think, who have heard a lot of my podcasts or radio shows live have known you because we've talked several times this way. But tell everyone who hasn't met you, give them a little background.
We're going to do the elevator store. You know, they call it the elevator pitch. It's got to be short.
So. Let's have that. Yes.
In a nutshell, it's hard to imagine, but for almost 30 years, I was married to one of the most famous former Jesuit priests, which is quite remarkable considering I was raised by two devoutly atheist Jewish parents.
Yes.
And the only religion they practiced was religiously hating each other's guts and mine. And here I end up with this beautiful man.
God has a sense of humor, for sure.
I know. So the thing is, when I was a little girl, I had a premonition of this man that I was going to marry. I saw him perfectly fleshed out in my mind's eye. So I just said, okay, don't date, wait till he appears. I'm living like this medieval goddess, you know, in the middle of the 70s. And Jean did appear on the first day of my freshman year at Vassar College. I'd been shut out of all sociology. I wanted to take sociology. So the secretary said, go ask the department chair, Jean Pain, if he can find a seat for you in one of the closed classes. Well, you know, because I've said it before in your show, I stepped into his office, and I had an out-of-body experience where my soul shot at high speed through a tunnel to the end of my life. And then when I shot back into my body, I got the message that he was the one, and he was going to be everything to me. And then I forgot about it and went about my life as a college student. And right after I met Jean, I found out that for most of his life, he had been one of the most famous Jesuit priests in history. He had taught at the Vatican. He founded the Liberation Theology Movement designed to fight church oppression from within, and he actually launched to international fame when he publicly opposed the Pope and the Catholic Church as they were trying to block the legalization of divorce in Italy. And he told me years later, because he was such a radical feminist Jesuit priest, he didn't want to see women trapped in marriages where they were being abused. So he fought on the grounds of religious freedom. The church should butt out of the private sector. He won. Right. He got the divorce bill passed, changed the course of Italian history, and then the Pope granted him the dispensation of his vows so that he wasn't excommunicated, and then Vassar recruited him, and I met him there on the first day of my
first year. I'm sorry to giggle, but I can imagine the Pope saying, how do we get rid of this guy? Oh, I know what, we'll tell him, we'll give you dispensation, or we'll excommunicate you, which would you prefer?
Anything. We don't want you excommunicated, we want you out of Europe.
Yes, exactly right.
And he actually told me years later that ex-priests can't work in Europe. Even with the dispensation, they're shunned. So he really had to come to America.
Yeah, well, that was smart of him anyway. Much better, much freer place for someone who was clearly a very free
thinker.
Well,
it was also our destiny.
Yes,
destiny, right? I was being led to Vassar to meet him.
We have talked about that before here, the fact that we plan our lives. And it's very clear that you and Jean planned this before your births together. So I think it's all wonderful to see and wonderful to be on the sort of a ringside seat for. So you and
exactly.
he fell in love and were married. He's much older than you, right? He was a couple of decades older.
Well, Roberta, I used to tease him. So I used to say to him, Jean, you need to find a younger wife. I can't keep up with you. And he was 37 and a half years older than I, but I couldn't keep up with the man.
Wow. Oh, my goodness.
I couldn't keep
and
up with him. Because, you know, they say saints, I truly believe he's a saint, are eternally youthful. And really, on the day that he left his body, when I'm getting ahead of myself, he said to me in the morning, I feel like I felt when I was 30.
Yeah.
You know? He did.
Yeah, what a wonderful man. Wonderful and playful man, too. Jamie and I will, when we are near one another, we'll do a meal together, and he's always there, and he's always got something to say, which is really fun. Anyway, so all right.
Roberta, this week was Valentine's, you know, and I came downstairs, and he turned my cell phone off. It was off, and he was playing The Girl from Ipanema, and the lyrics, how can I tell her I love her? But each day when she walks to the sea, she looks straight ahead, not at me.
Oh, my goodness. And so none of that was from you? That was all from him?
Yeah, my phone was off. And when I was coming down the stairs, I said, what? He turned it on and put the song on Pandora.
Oh, isn't that funny? Well, but see, that's what he is. He's a character. He really is. You don't think of,
someone
who was a big famous Jesuit as having, being basically a kid, but that's what he sort of feels like to
an
me.
An imp.
Yeah, see, perfect.
Imp. Yep.
Exactly what he is. So then he died of a bee sting. It was an anaphylactic shock experience, and you were in Italy. And how old was he then?
Italy on the beach.
How old was he?
He was 84, which was the reverse of, you know, he left the Jesuit order at 48, right? And there he was, 84, all these synchronicities, and I was 48. On the
day
my goodness, he left his body, he was 84, I was 48. So I felt like I was entering the order on the year that he left his body.
Oh, what a good thought. Jamie, how and when did you and he take it into your heads to write a novel?
Well, it's kind of like everything else that's happened in our lives. It's all sort of divinely ordained. It wasn't decided really by me. I just sort of listen and obey. So in the early 80s, when we began our love affair, Jean, of course, told me all about his life when he was a Jesuit, and he was a professor at the University of the Vatican, which is called Gregorian University. So he was a professor there, and out of the Vatican, Jean also founded the Vatican's first and only social research center called Ceres. So out of Ceres, while he was conducting research all over the world on the church and whether the church was meeting the needs of the faithful, he uncovered this cover-up. And when he told me about it, I said, Jean, we have got to write a novel and reveal this because it's never been told before.
Wow.
So instead of having children, we did this novel. This was
yes.
the baby that we kept
yes.
raising up and, you know, and we worked on it for decades.
For decades, really. Wow.
Decades. Decades.
Writing
now,
fiction.
Now, it was never the right time.
It's writing fiction is a lot of fun, and especially when it's
yeah.
channeled or semi-channeled. Most people don't understand. You know, they talk about a muse. I have a muse that sort of helps me do this or that. Well, in reality, that's our guides. And most people who write have guides or for fiction or for nonfiction or for both. I have them for both. And so clearly,
right.
Jean must have summoned some fiction guides because it's really, I think, an excellent novel for somebody who's never written fiction
well,
before.
Well, actually, the novel was really my idea. And I must say that, you know, I constructed the novel around this secret. And,
yes.
And I just, you know, I just said, this to me is a good plot. In order
yes,
for us
it is.
To reveal the secret. And that's how it came about, you know.
But it's
and
so
I've
much
been studying
than
novel
that.
Writing for quite a while.
Well, good for you. Well, I've told Jamie she's got to write another one. And she said, what? But,
can't
you
write.
Know, I'm going to keep
Roberta,
nagging.
I already have happens. Toothpicks in my eyeballs.
I know, trying to keep your eyes open. I understand. But
yeah,
the
right?
thing about The Calling is that it's rich in place. It's set in Italy, and you can literally smell the garlic in the air and the flowers. It's amazing how mm-hmm. intense that sort of aura of where you are and what's going on is. And you're in the minds, especially in one of the mind of one young priest, which as I was reading it, I thought, oh my goodness, Jean's telling us what it felt like to be him when he was young. And this is something
yes.
we don't think about. We don't think about what a young priest has to go through, especially if he's heterosexual, to have what he has to give up, what he has to. I mean, who do you love more? Do you love being a well-rounded man, or do you love God more? What a terrible choice!
But may I insert also because this will actually be revealed in the novel, and I don't think I'll be giving away too much if I say this. In Europe, the first male or the only male born in a French
yes.
aristocratic family, he goes to the Jesuits. Well, Jean was an aristocrat, and so he went. Now, the guys were pushed in to the seminary as young boys.
Yeah.
And so the idea of choice, I mean, it could be 12. Jean was pushed in at age 16. So these guys
oh.
have no experience, no relationship, and they're just obeying, essentially, what's expected of them in their family culture. So that in and of itself is a tragedy, which is, you know, that's the irony behind the title, The Calling.
Yes.
Right? Because, and we quote Andrew Greeley, the decline in priestly vocations is due to a decline in referrals by the two principal recruitment officers, priests and mothers.
Priests and mothers.
So,
wow.
You know, priests and mothers. So, you know, you're going to go to the, if you come from an aristocratic family, you're the only son, you're going. So that's an underpinning of, you know,
yes.
it's sort of a very important underpinning of the novel. So these guys, they're just obedient. They don't know. Most of them are virgins. They've never had any experience with women. And, you know, another thing, which we don't really talk about often, you know, people assume, oh, well, if we abolished celibacy, we wouldn't have all this pedophilia in the church. But that is a total misunderstanding because pedophiles, the history, I'm speaking now as a shrink, if you were sexually violated as a child, let's say you're a male and you were violated by a male, well, now you've got a kind of imprint that's going to predispose you to recreating the trauma by abusing little boys because you were abused. We tend to
yeah.
repeat trauma. So priests who were sexually abused by priests or other men might be inclined to enter the priesthood because they have greater access to boys and young men. That's a whole separate issue from celibacy. If you're a straight man and you are feeling sexually frustrated by the mandatory celibacy requirement, you're not going to go and molest a little boy. You will have an affair, or you'll cheat, or you'll, you know, pick a nun. You're not going to go to a little
pick
boy.
Pick a nun.
You see what I'm
yeah.
saying?
Oh, totally. And that's a really good insight. Yeah. But let's think about this, everyone. If God is calling you to serve him and to serve his people, what if he doesn't happen to also be calling you to be celibate? What if you're a normal, you know, heterosexual or even homosexual man who needs a sex life, especially when he's young? Those callings don't go together. And we know that now. Maybe they didn't know
exactly.
that 1,000, 1,500 years ago.
Exactly.
They know it now, and yet they continue with this nonsense.
It's ridiculous. It's absolutely ridiculous. And, you know, Roberta, people, I speak about this at the end of the novel, where I talk about Jean was fighting for the abolition of mandatory celibacy as far back as the 1940s. He was writing articles about it. He was a real pioneer in everything he did with the church. He was really trying to liberate men in terms of this horrible imposition, the yoke of mandatory celibacy. He
yes.
said that the original opinion was, oh, well, allowing a man to be celibate frees him for his ministry.
Nothing. And all it does is
such a
frustrate
fallacy.
Him. It puts this rock in his
absolutely.
Mind. He has to keep trying
absolutely.
To get around.
Absolutely. It's ridiculous.
Everyone,
exactly.
we have to take a break, but we're in the middle of a heated discussion. We'll continue in a few minutes. This is Roberta Grimes on Seek Reality. We'll be right back.
For over 50 years, Evelyn Stapula has been a loving advocate for people with disabilities throughout the state of Pennsylvania. President and founder of Big Heart Bridges, her organization actively campaigns for legislation and support of civil liberties that meet the needs of disabled individuals with housing, transportation, and employment. Ms. Stapula has joined forces with a variety of esteemed organizations that advocate for the disabled. She serves on the board of the United Cerebral Palsy of Pittsburgh and the Governor's Cabinet and Advisory Committee for People with Disabilities, and she is a consultant for the Pennsylvania Governor's Conference for Women. Her many efforts have led to the implementation of a transportation program for the disabled with the Access Paratransit System of Allegheny County. Evelyn Stapula strives daily to serve the interests of the disabled, to protect their freedoms, and enable them to live normal public lifestyles. To learn more, please call 412-491-2605 or email Evelyn at ers92645@verizon.net.
Are you looking for employment and live in Los Angeles, Orange, Riverside, and San Bernardino counties? Jobs Annex is the place for you. Are you an employer looking to fill a position or quite a few positions in Los Angeles, Orange, Riverside, and San Bernardino counties? Jobs Annex is for you. Employers, JobsAnnex.com is your resource for career-minded people. JobsAnnex.com is the convenient place for job seekers and employers to hook up and move forward. Jobs Annex has been serving Los Angeles, Orange, Riverside, and San Bernardino counties for over 14 years. Jobs Annex is a former employment search firm. We've evaluated many thousands of resumes, and we understand what employers want and what job applicants need to be successful in their interviews. At Jobs Annex, we provide you with the tools to tell your story for free. Our resources at JobsAnnex.com will help each applicant construct an award-winning resume, an eye-catching cover letter, and key interview questions to ask in various types of interviews. Best of all, it's free. JobsAnnex.com. That's JobsAnnex.com.
Welcome back to Seek Reality with Roberta Grimes on the BBM Global Network and TuneIn Radio. And we were in the middle of a heated discussion of celibacy in the Catholic Church, which plays a central role in Jamie Turndorf's wonderful new novel, The Calling. I just should add, my husband still is a very strict Catholic. He came home from church last Sunday, and he said, well, it was my favorite priest this time, and I knew who he meant. There's a priest who is married and has children and has a nice, healthy, normal life, and because he was once an Episcopal priest. If you're going to be a Catholic priest, here's sort of a professional tip. First, be an Episcopalian, get married, have a normal life, and then convert, and they'll let you keep your wife and children. And he finds this man gives a much better homily. He really is a much better priest. He thinks it's because he has a family. So there's a little bit of evidence for the church. We should talk, too, about why, because some people who aren't familiar with Catholicism are saying, why the heck do they make them be celibate? way back in the, you know, probably three digits period of years in very, very early church, there was a problem with heredity. People were worried that priests would, who had families, would get wealth that should belong to the church and would pass it along in their families. So they made them be celibate so the church would keep the money. Well, the church has plenty money now. And in fact, in Protestant churches, this is not a problem. So it's time for all things come to an end, and it's time for this to come to an end. If it doesn't, the Catholic Church is going to come to an end. I don't see any other option. What do you think, Jamie?
May I also insert something here? Very interesting point about why the church has come to view sex as sinful and why they then impose celibacy. In addition to, John is nodding his head and saying, you're absolutely right. It was so that the church could keep the money and it wouldn't be dissipated among the families of the priests. Right before we left for Italy, Roberta, Jean outlined a book that he was going to write. Now, the guy had 10 doctoral degrees. He spoke 10 languages. He was so conversant in the classics. He, you know, had a doctor of letters from the Sorbonne. Right before we left for Italy, he said, Jamie, the book I'm going to write when we come back is called Sex is Not a Sin. And he was going to explain how the church derailed and started to view sex as a sin in the first place. And he went back to, because he was thinking about the original philosophers like Plato, and the Platonician philosophers believed in the dualistic separation of flesh and spirit. And so they believed flesh was sinful, spirit is pure. So the church, wanting to gain infiltration in the popular culture, adopted the prevailing philosophy, the Platonician philosophy that everybody was believing. So it's a sociological explanation. When you want to conquer a people, you have to adopt their values. So the church bought into the Platonician philosophy, and he said that they never righted themselves from that point on. They continued to believe the body and the flesh is sin and the spirit is good.
Yes, isn't that foolish and stupid? Oh my goodness! And we have the same dichotomy actually in Western culture. It's the reason why science remains so clueless to this day. And anyone who has heard some of my broadcasts knows how I feel about this. At the early part of the 20th century, the scientific community, the gatekeepers, the peer-reviewed journals, and the university departments adopted materialism as their fundamental dogma, and they won't look at anything that they call spiritual. So here we have it going the other way around. The fact is there's one reality.
But you realize that kind of, any kind of dualistic thinking, black or white, good or bad, is an extension of a very primitive mind. All babies all over the world through from the beginning of time, the baby brain is governed by black and white thinking, the good witch, the bad witch. The baby can't integrate both. But as we evolve psychologically and spiritually, we understand there's no such thing as either or. There isn't the body is, the flesh is sin, spirit is pure, or the material. You know, it's the same kind of dualistic thinking that infiltrated science as well, and it's a young brain kind of thinking.
Yeah. It's an immature brain, absolutely right. And mind,
young,
actually
immature brain.
Mind.
Yep.
Right. Let's talk about what you do today. How do you help people now? Because I hear your stories, but I think everyone should sort of have a sense of what does Jamie Turndorf actually do?
Okay, so, you know, I've been in practice as a mainstream shrink for 34 years. 10 years ago when Jean left his body and made his presence so known to me. Look, during the break, he played with us and cut out my audio.
He did.
Just
he did.
So that we would know he's here with us, right?
Right.
He didn't do it
right.
on air. He told me he was going to do it during the break, not to mess with us. So Jean makes manifestations all the time, many of which I've captured on film. The purpose of all these manifestations is to prove we don't die, we just leave our bodies. As a result of my experiences with him and my discovery that, oh my goodness, because we don't die, therefore our relationships are not meant to end with bodily death. And that's why I created my new transdimensional grief method, where I show the bereaved how to reconnect with their loved ones without a medium, without a channeler, without a psychic. And then I go a step farther and I show them how to dialogue with the departed in order to heal any unfinished business that they have, because we all have unfinished business with someone in spirit, and Western grief therapy gives us no way of working it out.
So that's right.
That's evolved out of my story. You know, obviously, Love Never Dies is my memoir, and it became number one internationally. It's in 34 languages. You know this, but in the final part of Love Never Dies, I introduce my new grief therapy method, and now I work with people all over the world, helping them to reconnect. I'm actually just now launching the Love Club, where I'm going to help people. I'll work with them, you know, online, video conferencing, in a beautiful, intimate, loving group over 6 months, and I will show them how to reconnect, stay connected, heal unfinished business, and I also train and certify coaches in my method as well.
It works amazingly. I've seen Jamie do this on stage. Who in the audience has a terrible problem unresolved with someone who's died? And she brings them up on stage and she fixes it. I just don't even, having seen it, I still can't explain it.
What I discovered is that just like in relationships on the earth plane, we begin the reconnection and we begin the healing, but it's a process, just like for a relationship with someone in a body. It requires work. It requires some help and overseeing and support. You know, any business
yes.
takes some time to work through.
We are with Dr. Jamie Turndorf, who has written a wonderful novel called The Calling, which is rich in texture. I mean, you really believe you're in Italy, I have to say. I've never even been to Italy, and now I feel as if I've been. And it's a great mystery. You can't put it down because you know how mysteries are. They keep you figure you're going to learn more on the next page, and you just can't. Pretty soon you're at the end. But also for me, it was a wonderful way to kind of get inside how it feels to be a priest. You can imagine it, but with this novel, you really kind of get how it is to be a young, naive, virgin young man who's now an adult and is surrounded by women and loves God and wants to be a priest, but has this other stuff going on. I mean, what a terrible position to put people in. I found that to be so touching. That was one of the things that kept me turning pages. What is he? Where is he? Where is his head now? What is he going to do? So I love this
novel. Are you talking
about
his big head or his little head, you know?
Well, you know, one of the things you all ought to know about Jamie is that she's not always PG, so that's all right.
Look,
but I think I also wrote the foreword or something to this book, didn't I? I'm in there
beautiful.
Too somehow. Oh, good.
Oh, beautiful foreword.
I wrote, so she said, write something for the back, and I wrote something so long that they couldn't put it on the back, so we put it on the inside, or they did put it on the inside. Now, tell us the story of how this book got published.
Oh, that is so amazing, too. So I mentioned in the last segment that I'm training coaches in my transdimensional grief method. Well, none of my coaches are near me. They're all over the world, and we meet every Tuesday night over Zoom. And every week since I began the coaches training and certification, we're hearing voices, we're seeing lights bursting, we're seeing Jean's silhouette stepping onto the thumbnails of the participants because he's just seriously part of this. We're even hearing papers rustling. And we found out almost every coach that has come to me has said that her husband in spirit said that he went for help to a clinic in the spirit realm run by Jean, and the husband
really?
Say, can you please help us reconnect with our wives? And Jean says, I have the perfect person. So then they're running a satellite branch over there teaching those in spirit how to connect with their loved ones, and it's crazy. So anyway, one Tuesday night a couple months ago, it's wonderful, right? So one Tuesday night a couple months ago, I'm hearing a male voice so loud that I just think, I don't know what I'm going to do. I have to figure out what this person is saying. So this has been going on now. Incredible conversations, papers rustling. They're having a good old time enjoying learning as I'm helping everybody reconnect to spirit. So,
right.
And I'm teaching them how to do it so that they can do this work. So I send the audio to Craig Hogan, the afterlife researcher, and I said to him, can you make out what this voice is saying? Roberta, he writes me back the next day. He says, I hear a man saying over and over again, they're calling, they're calling, they're calling.
Oh,
well, he assumed it was they're calling, right? Because think about it. If John's saying the calling, it sounds the same. The calling, they're calling.
Yeah,
so
right.
He assumed, he said, I presume it's the spirit saying they're calling. I said, no, that's not what that is. That's John nagging me. Now's the time to publish the calling. The novel we wrote and worked on for decades. So I sent it to the publisher, you know, Christine, CFA Publishing. She had just taken on the audio book of Love Never Dies and the translation of Love Never Dies in the 34 languages. So I said, want to have a look at this? And I sent it, I'll never forget this, it was midnight on Friday night, and the next morning at 8 a.m. I had a contract in the inbox to publish.
That's how
calling.
She is. Yep, she loved it too.
Yep.
That's right. I should just say, since you've mentioned her name, I should just say that this is a love fest. We both love Christine Anderson, CFA Publishing, but she's not taking any more books. We've basically totally overloaded her, and in a very happy way. So I'll just say it publicly. I cannot thank her enough for all that she's done to help to get the word out about what actually is going on. And I think in coming months, we'll have other exciting things to say that are going to blow your mind about what she's been doing. So just saying that as a teaser. So, all right. So she said, let's publish it. You sent it to me and said, hey, I wrote a novel. And I said, what? And there the rest really it went very quickly, because there was little, I found little that I wanted to change, which I have to say, let me just say parenthetically, other people have asked me to look at their fiction. I don't even do it anymore. I don't have the time. But what I have looked at looks like beginner fiction, which is very not very good. I mean, this is one of the most difficult things to do, even passably well, to write a complex adult novel is very difficult. And so the fact that you did it so well, I'm not surprised you did it over decades, because this is the kind of thing you would take you a lot of time to practice and to really get right. But other people have read it too, right? And they've liked it as well. I have to believe that. I think it's the right time for this kind of thing, because as I said at the start, when people who are serious in their work write fiction, it's not going to be silly fiction. It's going to be exploring ideas that arise out of their work, in this case, Sean's work. This is really his novel. This is his story in so many ways. And the mystery at the end will break your heart. I mean, what the solution is will break your heart. I mean, it's just so tragic, unnecessary, and foolish that the Catholic Church puts people through this for no reason. Certainly no modern reason.
You know, I hope that, because I know that this is Jean's wish, that the publication of our novel, The Calling, will provide the impetus for the church to abolish mandatory celibacy.
Well, I think this is something a lot of people who still care about Catholicism ought to be working on, because I think it's going to be a matter of life or death for the church. I've talked with my husband about this. He's coming to feel the same thing, since he finds that the only priest he's ever seen in a very long time who does a good homily is somebody who didn't start out as a Catholic priest and understands life, because he's living life. That's the real problem. You can't understand life
and understands relationships.
Yes. How can you counsel couples if you don't know what it is to be in a couple? Jamie, is there anything else you'd like to say about The Calling? It's now available on Amazon. You can get it through bookstores, but as we know, nowadays bookstores are so poor and desperate that they'll stock only books after they've become bestsellers. So the easiest way to get it is on Amazon. And it's going to be an audiobook as well, right?
Yes, I'm finishing up reading it now. I'm almost at the last chapter. And by the time your show is archived on your podcast site, I believe that we're going to be having a bestseller campaign where the book will be available for zero.
Zero is a very good price. Wow.
Yeah, right? It'll be a special introductory, you know, promotion. And I think that the publisher is coinciding that with the posting of the show on the 14th of March, where it's your podcast is posted. And so it'll be a very short little window. And then I always say, love to have you share the novel with your friends and family. Really help us create this love revolution where the whole world starts talking about the tragedy of mandatory celibacy. And also write reviews, because if you really appreciate the free gift, in exchange, you can thank me and Jean for giving you the free book by writing a review on Amazon and Goodreads, which also helps spread the love revolution, helps spread the message.
Yeah, this is one of the things that we don't have time to talk about now is the fact that because there's so much that isn't very good being published now, it's harder to get attention for really worthy books, especially if you're not going the dinosaur route and trying to get it published in New York, which, by the way, to me is a fool's errand. I've done that, been there, done that. I would never do it again.
Yes, so, well, we both have done it. Absolutely.
Yes. So anybody who has any questions about the book or anything and can't reach Jamie, you can always reach me through robertagrimes.com and I'll help you with it. So Jamie, tell people how they can reach you.
Okay. So for the bestseller campaign, I have a dedicated website, thecallingbook.com. My main website is AskDrLove.com, no periods, no spaces. There you can find out everything about my Transdimensional Grief Method coaches training, my new Love Club, which the doors of the Love Club are going to open in the end of March. So that's also a good time for this broadcast, because if you want to really work with me in a very loving group, and be held and supported, raise your vibration, learn how to reconnect and dialogue, and have my help to heal unfinished business, that's the Love Club. But you can find everything at AskDrLove.com. And, of course, you know, I'm on social media. Twitter is AskDrLove. I think I have 270,000 followers there.
And, oh, my
Facebook,
goodness.
Facebook.
Wow.
/ AskDrLove. Yeah.
And it's always Ask DrLove. We don't spell out doctor, right?
Correct.
Yeah.
No, we don't. We don't.
And again, if you have trouble at all reaching Jamie, you know how to reach me. I'm happy to put you in touch. And I learned something that I didn't know, which is that Jean is doing this there for the husbands or the spouses of the people who are here trying to connect with them. And so he's basically your biggest referral source, probably, because he's getting the spouses to put it into the minds of the living people to go to find you. I think that's just so wonderful how they all work together. I mean, the beauty of it is that if you have issues with somebody who has died and it's unfinished business, and you're saying, Mom, I'm so sorry, or to some other dear one, I'm so sorry. Understand that once we have transitioned, we no longer have the issues we had before. And so they're eager to reconnect with you. And one of the very good
ways.
They're desperate, right? Yes. To connect with you, because they don't want
to make peace with us.
Yes. They don't want you to be upset. This was just all a play.
Right.
It wasn't real. It's not real life. Where they are now is real life. So anybody that you feel you have unfinished business with is eager to have you find a way to just forgive yourself and forgive them and move on. And Jamie's method, frankly, I think is the easiest way to do it and the gentlest to get past that. Mm-hmm. So I recommend it. Having seen it happen, I have to say it's certainly what I would do if I had any of those issues. So again, the way that they would connect with you is is it Jamie at Ask Dr. Love? I can't recall
No, just go to AskDrLove.com. There are contact buttons right there.
It's
a newly designed site. You can find everything. Just go to www.AskDrLove.com. And if you want to contact me, there's a contact button at the website.
That's great. That's perfect. And for the calling, it's thecallingbook.com. And I had a little part in this, because when I first saw what they were going to use for cover, I said, no. And because no. I could see it in my mind, and you did it better than it showed up in my mind. But the cover is beautiful and amazing. You should just go look at the cover and know that I have a certain amount of, you know, polish the fingernails against the chest kind of pride about it, because I saw it in my mind before you did. Probably from dear Sean. I think it must have come from him. But this is fun. If you're not having fun with what you're doing, dear friends, do something else. What Jamie is doing is such a joy to her that she is decades younger to know than you can imagine, because she's doing what she loves. This is all beautiful stuff. And I'm about a million years old, but you'd never know it if you met me, because I don't think I'm older than 30 either, because everything I do is done out of love, and it's my joy. I love hearing from people. I love helping people. I love this opportunity to talk to you live. The whole thing is just, if I were to design a life, I couldn't imagine a single thing I would change. So here's another bit of advice that's in my mind because of talking to Jamie. Find what your bliss is and do it for other people. And you will know happiness in this life that most people only get to know after they've graduated. Wouldn't you say? Don't you agree?
Absolutely right. And you really do walk the walk, Roberta. Everything you do in joy, and you do in service, and you do in love. You do.
Well, it's because it's fun. If you're having fun, then nothing else really matters. We are in the zone of joy when we are serving other people. And Jamie, it's been so good to have you here. We'll have to do this again. So just consider yourself hugged, dear. We're going to see each other in a few weeks, and you'll be able
to catch
up.
You're not going to believe this. An email just came in giving you a hug right now, right when you said I'm giving you a hug. An email came into my inbox.
What? I see. Well, was that
an email? I was just sitting here, and this email, just as you said, I'm giving you a hug. It says, I'm feeling you need a hug, and it just popped into my inbox right as you said that.
Isn't that wonderful? See how much fun this all is? Nothing is grave. Nothing spiritual is grave. It is all full of joy. I have a picture beside my desk of Jesus laughing out loud, and I know he's just laughing with us now. So, my dear precious friend, you are a powerful, eternal being. You never began, you never will end. And when you really understand everything that means, all its implications, it's going to change everything in your life for the better. Next week, our guest is going to be Bill Vandenbush. He had a near-death experience in Vietnam a long time ago. But If Morning Never Comes, which is the title of the book, is much more than another NDE book. Instead, I think it's the most extraordinarily vivid and genuine account of the Vietnam War that I've ever read, and I've read a lot of them. Bill is one of the very few people who are just naturally gifted writers, and his recall of details from so long ago is amazing and heartbreaking, actually. If you're my age and you remember the Vietnam War, this book is going to touch you really deeply. And if you're younger, please don't miss this chance to connect with the 60s generation. Talk about my generation. When we were young, we blew up the United States, and we did it because so many of our friends were being forced to fight and die in a war that we knew even then was about nothing but egos. We knew it was going to end with nothing gained by anybody, and of course, that's exactly what happened. Reading If Morning Never Comes was surprisingly emotional for me, even 50 years later, and I think it'll be emotional for you, and you're going to love Bill. Please join us. This week, our guest has been Dr. Jamie Turndorf. She turns out to be surprisingly versatile. Her book about ongoing relationships with her husband, Jean Penn, and we never get to talk about the sex. We'll have to talk about that next time. But her book about that relationship is Love Never Dies. It's an international bestseller, and her new novel, The Calling, is a gripping look at how it feels to be a young priest with all the yearning for God and all the yearning that are the earthly yearnings that means. I think you will find it very touching. It's also a terrific, frankly, a terrific mystery. I couldn't put it down. My own nonfiction books are Liberating Jesus, My Thomas, The Fun of Dying, The Fun of Staying in Touch, The Fun of Growing Forever, and The Fun of Living Together, about which you're soon going to learn a lot more. They're all available from bookstores on Amazon, and all but the last are available as audiobooks. I've just finished reading that one. Most of them are also available in 33 languages on Amazon platforms worldwide. So you've got no excuse. I hope you'll read my books. If you want to talk about any of these books, you can always contact me through robertagrimes.com, and I'll be delighted, delighted to hear from you. Recent episodes of Seek Reality are available on bbmglobalnetwork.com. Earlier episodes are being rebroadcast on Dream Vision 7 Radio and on the X-Zone Broadcast Network and its affiliates worldwide at xzbn.net. Seek Reality is available as free podcasts on webtalkradio.net and on iTunes. And I move around some, so if you ever lose track of where I am, just go to robertagrimes.com and go to the radio button. Again, I answer every email. If you have any questions, comments, or anything and you'd like to talk to me, just send me a contact. I'll answer you and I'll be delighted to. Meanwhile, this has been Seek Reality with Roberta Grimes. Please enjoy and make the most of this coming week in our one reality, knowing that you are a powerful, eternal being, and you are infinitely loved.
This has been Seek Reality with your host, Roberta Grimes. Tune in each week and discover the nature of reality and God, past, present, and future in a way that can only be told by Roberta Grimes on the next episode of Seek Reality.